Welcome to part three of my discussion with Douglas Cumming of York University on his report on venture exchanges.
You know, here in the United States, we passed the Jobs Act, the Jumpstart Our Startup Businesses Act. This was from 2012. And there were a number of provisions in there that were designed to make it so that small companies could access the capital markets much more easily. They've sort of shut out of it much more after the bursting of the tech telecom bubble in the early 2000s. And this was a way to sort of step back from some of the provisions that had prevented those small companies from getting in there. And it's not just here in the United States that these issues are coming up. In Europe, there's a fairly significant push from the European Commission to address financing for small companies in hopes that it might help jumpstart their national economies as well. Yeah. What kind of policy lessons did you take from this study that that would be applicable in these regions that are starting to try to push capital markets financing for small and medium-sized companies?
Yeah, great question. And so to address this, maybe I could just first talk about what we observe in the UK. So in the UK, we find similar rates of fraud relative to detected fraud relative to Canada, which we found equally surprising. So in particular, we found in the UK that fraud is 0.4% of the senior London Exchange listings and only 0.1% of AIM listings. So they're a smaller alternative investment market or venture type exchange. And again, we're surprised about that because they don't have that same sort of fragmented regulatory structure that we could arguably complain about in Canada. But the other sort of difference that they might have that could explain those are to do with nominated advisors that might provide additional governance on associated with companies going public. There have been there's some things written about these advisors in terms of whether or not they're really helping or not. But my sense, for instance, when you look at provisions in the Jobs Act, and in particular the thing that I think that a lot of people like to talk about in that context are efforts to allow crowdfunding, which is I guess we could get into this in a fair bit of detail, but with the crowdfunding stuff, this is really very different from our traditional way in which we view securities regulation, because it's allowing, if we have equity crowdfunding, for instance, it's like allowing companies to issue without all the normal disclosure requirements that we'd normally like to see. And so the implications of that are quite significant, although possibly have tremendous benefits for companies that might otherwise have difficulty accessing capital markets. And what we would say, based on our stats that we observe in this paper, is that if those types of provisions are allowed, like crowdfunding, then there should be put in place, as much as possible, in terms of the cost effectiveness as well, put in place governance standards on those companies that minimize any potential adverse consequences associated with having that type of crowdfunding. And so we could get into that in a fair bit more detail if you like, and I've done some other work on crowdfunding recently, because crowdfunding is permitted in certain European countries as well as in Australia, and so we do have some data on that from our other work.
Could you just, sort of briefly summarize how those efforts have worked? I mean, have they, what kind of investors are drawn to those kinds of funding mechanisms? And has there been any? Were you able to track what how the companies performed once they've been once they were there? I mean, once they were able to access those markets.
Yes. So, for instance, in Australia, we have a recent data set on equity crowdfunding from a portal in Australia, and we essentially look at the disclosures made by companies. So in the case of crowdfunding, disclosures are effectively voluntary. So what people
sort of sight unseen, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And so, but the interesting thing that we see is that the company's success in terms of the money that they're able to raise and the speed with which they're able to raise that money a second time is very much correlated with the disclosures that they make.
Mm. So investors are sort of showing some discernment, in other words.
Absolutely. So people pay attention, and if they see things that are disclosed that provide some level of comfort, then they are able to raise much more money and much more quickly relative to companies that don't make such disclosures.
So what kind of information are you talking about? I mean, is it sort of regular updates of financial information? Is it regular updates of general corporate information?
There's certainly financial information that gets disclosed, and then whether or not in respect to these financial information as well as financial forecasts. If a company is, for instance, having disclaimers on their financial forecasts or not having any financial forecasts at all, then that can have very negative impacts on their ability to raise money. So having disclaimer clauses or not even forecasting anything at all, that can negatively impact their ability to raise money. Another thing that we observe in these markets is that if companies are selling too much equity, so the founders aren't keeping their skin in the game, so to speak. So if you're selling way too much equity, then that's interpreted very negatively, and so that investors are less likely to get involved, which is quite intuitive because you want to keep your entrepreneurs that are raising money. The investors want to see them keep a substantial skin in the game, as they say, so that their interests are aligned. So the other important thing that we see is that when the issuing company in a crowdfunding context has substantial board members, reputable board members, those types of folks, then that's significantly helpful for raising money and raising money quicker. Then the other is that if they give some sort of route to liquidity for these investors, such as they tell folks that some stage we're going to want to have an IPO exit, which means that at some point in the future there could be liquidity associated with this equity crowdfunding, then that also likewise helps them raise more money in the future. And again, this is based on evidence from Australia where they have a few equity crowdfunding platforms. The one thing that we didn't see is that companies, which we think is interesting. So if a company has a patent and they disclose to folks that, we have a patent or, some other signal that we're, a good company in that respect, right? So that they are much less likely to raise money successfully in a crowdfunding context, or at least maybe said differently, that's the wrong way to put it. They are, that type of signal does not help them raise more money or help them raise more money quickly. And the reason why, we believe, is that if you are a startup with a patent, then likely you're able to raise money in some other way, right? So you might, for instance, attract venture capital financing through a formal limited partnership venture capital fund. And if you go through crowdfunding, that might be a signal to investors that you were unable to attract former venture capital. And so it doesn't very much help you in that kind of context.
Copyright 2013 CFA Institute. This program is designed to give accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is distributed with the understanding that CFA Institute is not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, tax, investment, or other expert advice. If legal advice or other expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional should be sought.